Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw, updating current events as only Jan can.
Library computer, data being received.
Produced by CosmicReality.com.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Cosmic Creating Show. Today is the 9th of March, 2022. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm known as the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, and Empowered Manifestation. And if you want to find me on social media, I'm Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, on Facebook and YouTube, and at Coach Jan Shaw on Twitter. And so today's show title is Ukraine and Khazaria, Gross Hypocrisy, Conspiracy Theories Coming True Again. So I'm going to continue to focus on the Russia-Ukraine story because obviously that's the main talking point in not only the mainstream news, but the alternative news. Although there are a few other things going on, like more exposure of the election fraud coming out of Wisconsin and Georgia and so on. And also, of course, we've had the information released in terms of data from Pfizer regarding the catastrophic effect of these so-called vaccines on the human body. But of course, the Russia-Ukraine situation is a great distraction from that. And I just want to start with a few comments before I go into a few articles I've got for you. And we know did an interview with Sheila Holm. I haven't watched all of it, but she was basically tying up links between Ukraine and also saying that Khazaria was the original Ukraine, which is the home base of the Khazarian Mafia. And I've mentioned the Khazarian Mafia before, the Luciferian Satan worshippers, horrendous crimes against humanity. And basically what she's saying is that they have infiltrated everywhere, you know, in all the governments across the world. But she's really focusing on the fact that Ukraine is the home base, a heart of so much evil and corruption. And we're still seeing all this virtue signalling by people with the Ukrainian flags and everything. I do have a long statement by Archbishop Vigano, who has put out various previous statements directed in some cases at President Trump when he was in office, warning about the Great Reset, and he has some pretty good commentary on it. It's very long, it's 24 pages long, so I've tried to pick out some key points, and I'll try and fit that in towards the end of the show. But talking of the virtue signalling, and oh, we've got to support Ukraine and everything else, I've mentioned this before as well, you know, who is actually supporting Ukraine. And Gateway Pundit have put an article out. George Soros and Hillary Clinton are cheering on war with Russia. Let me make this very simple. Oh, and incidentally, it was published yesterday on the 8th. Let me make this very simple. If you live in the West, you have been flooded with a massive propaganda campaign portraying Ukraine as a Jeffersonian democracy yearning to breathe free, and Russia has the ultimate evil empire. Not true. Two of the most high-profile voices advocating a fight with Russia are Hillary Clinton and George Soros. Got that? If you are wearing the Ukrainian flag and signing on to this doomed cause, you are on the side of Hillary Clinton and George Soros. Here's what Hillary said recently on the Rachel Maddow show. Former Secretary of State and failed presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has called to arm up an insurgency to repel Russia's invasion of Ukraine, joining a growing number of pundits and officials suggesting that Washington should hand Russia its own costly years-long occupation akin to the US or indeed Soviet experience in Afghanistan. Clinton made her case during a Monday night appearance with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, recalling that during the USSR's invasion of Afghanistan in the 1980s, resistance fighters had a lot of countries supplying arms and advice, which, she continued, didn't end well for the Russians. So, I think we have to watch this carefully. We have to provide sufficient military armaments for the Ukraine military and volunteers, and we have to keep tightening the screws, Clinton added. And then there is George Soros, who collaborated with the Nazis in World War II. I have witnessed Ukraine transform from a collapsing part of the Soviet Union to a liberal democracy and an open society. It has faced countless acts of Russian aggression but has persisted. And that was George Soros on February 26 this year. Allowing Putin to succeed on his quest will send a message across the world that nations can simply be created or dissolved by brute force. We must hashtag stand with Ukraine as they stand for us. Again, February 26th. The mainstream media, which largely ignores the tidal wave of illegal immigrants flooding our southern border, are quite keen to protect Ukraine's border. The mainstream media and the political establishment in Washington, D.C., denounce the horrors on the ground in Ukraine, but are deaf and mute when it comes to the Trump supporters that are being held as political prisoners in DC jails. Even though there is clear evidence that at least two Trump supporters were killed by police on January 6, there is no credible demand to investigate and hold the murderers accountable. If you are 38 years old or younger, you probably remember very little about the lies told by the George W. Bush administration to whip up the fury of the American people and launch an unjustified war in Iraq in 2003. I remember, I have not forgotten. If you want to stand in solidarity with Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Joe Biden, Antony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitt Romney and Lindsey Graham, know this. When you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. And the fleas they are carrying threaten the very security of this republic. So on the subject of conspiracy theories coming true, we've been saying since this whole thing began about the information that was revealed that the US has been funding bioweapon labs in the Ukraine. And that was one of the reasons why Russia invaded, to take out these bio labs, which were a threat to the Russian nation. And surprise, surprise, today I can share with you an article on Epoch Times. US is protecting biological research facilities in Ukraine from Russia, official. And, you know, if you've been on social media, you'll have seen the posts by people posting about these bioweapons labs, all fact-checked, and no, this is completely false, they don't exist. Well, I'm afraid the news is now out. So, as I say, this was published today. The United States is working to prevent Russia from taking control of Ukraine's biological research facilities, a U.S. official said. At the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Tuesday, U.S. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland was asked by Senator Marco Rubio, Republican Florida, who incidentally, I saw some tweets from him, and oh, he is just, you know, putting out this stuff about if there's going to be a bio weapon attack, it's going to be from Russia. If there's going to be a nuclear attack, it's going to be from Russia. Obviously, one of the deep staters. Anyway, continuing on. Victoria Nuland was asked by Senator Marco Rubio, Republican Florida, whether Ukraine has chemical or biological weapons. Ukraine has biological research facilities, which in fact we are now quite concerned that Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we're working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach, Newland responded. Rubio commented, I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a bio or chemical weapon incident or attack inside Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it? There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, Newland responded. It is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves. You have to laugh at that. I mean, this is what the Democrats and the Rhinos have been doing all along, accusing everybody else of the things that they're doing themselves. Russia has repeatedly perpetuated the claim that US-funded laboratories in Ukraine are developing biological warfare weapons, but the United States and Ukraine maintain the laboratories seek to prevent bioweapons and pathogens. The Russian Ministry of Defense issued a statement on Telegram accusing Ukraine of having destroyed pathogens being studied at a lab in Ukraine that the ministry says is funded by the US Department of Defense. During a special military operation, the facts of the Kiev regime's emergency cleanup of traces of a military biological program funded by the US Department of Defense implemented in Ukraine were revealed, the Russian Ministry of Defense alleged in its statement on March 6th. The statement claims that the ministry received documents that showed the Ukrainian Ministry of Health sent an instruction to all biological laboratories on February 24th to urgently destroy the stored stocks of dangerous pathogens, including plague, anthrax, tularemia, and cholera. In a separate statement on March 7th, the Russian ministry claimed that Ukraine has united a chain of more than 30 biological laboratories ordered by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, DTRA, an agency within the US Department of Defense. The Chinese regime also appeared to repeat Russia's allegations about the biological laboratories on March 7th. A US State Department spokesperson told the Epoch Times that the allegation is Russian propaganda and total nonsense. Such Russian claims have been debunked conclusively and repeatedly over many years. As we've said all along, Russia will invent false pretexts to justify their horrific actions in Ukraine, the spokesperson added. Such allegations from Russia were being propagated in state-run media weeks prior to its invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. The British Defence Ministry on March 8th noted in a statement, since the end of February, there's been a notable intensification of Russian accusations that Ukraine is developing nuclear or biological weapons. These narratives are long-standing but are currently likely being amplified as part of a retrospective justification for Russia's invasion of Ukraine. US, Ukraine say labs seek to prevent bioweapons. Well, considering Fauci funded bioweapon development in Wuhan with the engineered COVID virus, I don't think that holds much water, really, do you? So, continuing on, the DTRA previously said in a video posted in January that a program it runs, the Cooperative Threat Reduction Program, does not develop biological weapons. In the same video, Chris Park, a State Department official, told the United Nations that Russia's and China's allegations of suspicious activity at laboratories in Ukraine is pure disinformation. One component of the CTR program is the Biological Threat Reduction Program. The US Embassy in Ukraine in April 2020 issued a statement that said the BTRP works with the Ukrainian government to consolidate and secure pathogens and toxins of security concern in Ukrainian government facilities while allowing for peaceful research and vaccine development. The program also works to ensure Ukraine can detect and report outbreaks caused by dangerous pathogens before they pose security or stability threats. Our joint efforts help to ensure that dangerous pathogens do not fall into the wrong hands, it said. The CTR program was begun shortly after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. One of its goals was to reduce the threat of existing weapons of mass destruction programs in former Soviet republics. Under the program, Ukraine and the United States partnered in two agreements, one in 1993 and one in 2005. Ukraine's main security agency, the Security Service of Ukraine, elaborated on the agreements in a May 2020 Facebook post. Since 1993, there is an agreement to provide assistance to our state in eliminating strategic nuclear weapons and preventing the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. One of the points is the timely detection and prevention of outbreaks caused by dangerous pathogens, it said. The SBU also said that Ukraine's Ministry of Health and the US Department of Defense signed a framework agreement in 2005 to prevent the proliferation of technology, pathogens, and knowledge that could be used in the development of biological weapons. The statement said that within the framework of the 2005 agreement, a number of state laboratories in the Ukrainian cities of Odessa, Kharkiv, Lviv, Kyiv, Vinnytsia, Kherson, Dnipropetrovsk, I can't really pronounce that, sorry, have been upgraded through certain repair projects or the updating of equipment. The SBU also declared there are no foreign biological laboratories in Ukraine and that the laboratories involved are owned and funded by the Ukrainian government. We emphasise that these laboratories are funded from the state budget subordinated to the Ministry of Health and the State Service of Ukraine on food safety and consumer protection, it added. Andrew Weber, a senior fellow at the Council on Strategic Risks and a member of the Arms Control Association Board of Directors, also told AFP on March 3rd that the Pentagon has never had a biological laboratory in Ukraine. He told PolitiFact that the CTR program has provided technical support to the Ukrainian Ministry of Health since 2005 to improve public health laboratories, and that the mission of the health labs is analogous to the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The labs have recently played an important role in stopping the spread of COVID-19, Weber added. And if you believe that, you'll believe anything. I mean, come on. So, Epoch Times, I have my concerns about them at times. I know I share quite a bit with them, but they have been peddling the same kind of crap, pardon my French, as a lot of the mainstream media in terms of all this terrible invasion by Russia and poor old Ukraine and all the rest of it. But I think I've made it quite clear that my opinion of it is the absolute opposite of that. And in fact, you know, I was saying to a friend of mine that I feel I have a very strong feeling, and you know how I work through my intuition a lot, that this, the situation in Ukraine and Russia to me means that we are getting towards the end of this, that this is taking out, you know, the Khazarian mafia, the deep state, the swamp, the corruption, everything. And I've even seen reports of children being rescued from underground in Ukraine in a very, very bad condition. So obviously there's a lot of misinformation around, deliberate misinformation. They obviously, the deep state want to whip up this frenzy of support for Ukraine and absolutely against Russia. And unfortunately, as usual, so many people are falling for it. Now, I'd just like to share a slightly different take on this. And this is from The Good Citizen on Substack. So thegoodcitizen.substack.com. Back in the USSR, the swift de-Westernization of Russia. And this was published March the 5th. It was probably fun while it lasted, a brief 30-year flirtation with Western decadence and shameless mass consumerism in post-Soviet Russia is quickly coming to an end. It took 2 decades to get the engines going, but now it's time to shut them down again. The remnants will stick around for a generation or so, but the speed with which fashion and trends enter and exit the popular culture will ensure Russia crystallizes this moment in time in a similar way to the nations trapped behind the Iron Curtain in the middle of last century. It won't be quite the same, however, because this time things are different. This time it's the West that's degrading toward the worst elements of the USSR faster than Russia. Every horrible thing they tell us about Putin and Russia exists in the West, and tenfold in some cases. Political prisoners held without trial, censorship, Pravda media, kangaroo committees, secret police for internal coups, shutting down protests of one political nature while allowing others, unequal protection under the law, oligarchies posing as democracies, fascism posing as liberalism. Things are certainly trending backward toward tyranny, to say nothing of coerced bioweapons injections and democidal agendas. How about surrounding Russia with secret biolabs for 20 years and doing experiments on Ukrainian soldiers? We haven't even arrived at the endless bloody wars for greed and profit that saw no cries or pleas of mercy, no Iraqi, Afghan, Yemeni, Libyan or Syrian flag emojis, or disgraceful America-phobia of the likes we're presently witnessing against Russia. The depleted uranium used by American forces in Fallujah alone sent the cancer rate skyrocketing among locals there. Did you see any Western monuments light up with the colours of the Iraqi flag for them? We did see Western governments nod in approval as Colin Powell spoke of fictitious weapons of mass destruction at the United Nations. Selective outrage is a funny thing, reserved for certain peoples with certain agendas, all of whom should certainly never be trusted again. And yet here they are again, the same criminals back in the spotlight, showing the world how to react to the atrocities they're responsible for. What to believe and think and do, and always, of course, who to blame. It's as if, like the invasion of Ukraine, engineered by these Western powers, this entire reaction to the invasion is also being engineered by the same miscreants. The balance of power changes are happening fast. We are living fluid history, the kind Lenin talked about, where decades occur over weeks. Russia will never be the same. Time will only slow down at first there, but then quickly it will all freeze, like a mosquito trapped in amber at Kaliningrad Oblast. The slowing down merely the transition to balkanized internets. Russia will have their own information echo chamber, as it seems the world is intent on deglobalization at the order of the globalists. They must destroy the old to usher in the new. Europe will have its own internet with many American disinformation sites, strictly verboten and disinformation in quotes. It's already been in the works for years with the GDPR and Germany's asinine digital wrongthink ministry. The era of globalization cannot continue in the Ready Player One Bug Pod world they're engineering for us, while you will own nothing and be happy. The return of nationalization in a multipolar world is here. Cold War 2.0, new alliances, new enemies, with the dragon now squarely in the bear's castle, ready to be king to his prince. Nobody is writing about all this presently because there are no students of history at the great digital printing presses of the West with tokenized cultural gatekeepers. They're too busy celebrating the changing of Chicken Kiev to Chicken Kiev and all manner of ridiculous and pompous Russian cancellations, feeding the mindless Borg of woke idiots inhabiting all the important globalist-funded sewer pipes. Their collective pretense of meaningful action, a nice mirage. When it's too difficult to really make an impact, the digital performative kind becomes a satiating substitute, no effort required. Those who are changing their emojis to Ukrainian flags beside their pronouns are quietly cheering on the balkanization of information to national islands. They love censorship, and presently anything that will hurt or even appear to harm Russia is wonderful. The sanctions will be more harmful to them, but damn the consequences at home when you can't see past your own nose. Corporations are eagerly jumping on this train on the orders of global management. The house lights are going down, the audience is going silent. Backstage, the performers are taking their marks. Russia and China stage right. Schwab's crew stage left, with all the nodes of corporate power in costume, with lines rehearsed. The flights are cancelled. Airspace is now closed to those evil Ruskies. Trains and cars will follow. Border guards will be on guard for Russian passports, ready to say nyet. Western brands are fleeing Russia like there's a plague there. Profits and market caps don't matter in the future they're engineering with limitless central bank handouts. It's all a quaint, woke ink performance of a collective mass virtue signalling exodus that will maroon the nation of 150 million people into a DeLorean with a flux capacitor and a Mr. Fusion. Nike, H&M, Adidas, Disney, Netflix, Spotify, plus all the luxury brands favoured by the spoiled children of oligarchs, are announcing their departures. No more Western consumerist treats for the Russian people. Boo-hoo! Visa, MasterCard, Google and Apple Pay. The suffering must be profound. They've all spoken for the wokerati and said, "Proshe, my loves, we have not need for your ruble any longer." Great Scott, this is heavy. What is it with this word heavy? Is there something wrong with Earth's gravitational pull in the future? No, there is something wrong with Western man in the future. He has become an embarrassment of arrogance, ignorance, and hypocrisy on the world stage. Subdued by decades of decadence, he has embraced gluttony and cowardice and reduced himself to a servant for globalist pimps who demand he bend over and take what's offered. A new poll reveals this profound ignorance, with 74% of Americans wanting a no-fly zone implemented over Ukraine. Strangely, in a poll of the same people, only 0.2% wanted to start World War III. Interesting how polls work when the honest questions are asked. There are those who say there is no stage right or left, only the globalist stage, but they might be wrong. There are differences. Why orchestrate a coup in Russia if Putin is a WEF player? We must entertain the possibility that Putin is playing the WEF, the World Economic Forum, that those appearances at Davos were to give the impression of a team player willing to bend Russia over for the Schwabian order, only to turn the tables now that he's seen the future they're designing and wants no part of it. In an hour-long podcast episode with James Dellingpole, the Ukraine-Russia expert and former GCHQ analyst Alex Thompson surmises that Putin is not with the global cabal, despite his past pretenses. Assuming this is true and James Corbett is wrong, that makes the enemy of our enemies Putin. It makes sense when you see who the media is portraying as the villain. Remember, this is the CIA-controlled Western media and Western governments presently banning any alternative viewpoints. The same people responsible for instigating this war, managing the propaganda and pushing Ukrainian civilians to be cannon fodder for Western cameras. Putin is their enemy and has turned on global management. This is now the potential new scenario given the reaction of the world to Russian aggression in Ukraine. Is Putin still playing his role, or is he already past the king's gambit and eyeing the middle game? Why topple him with astroturf domestic anti-war protests and financial ruin if he's still moving the pieces on the board that he promised to move? If they do succeed in ousting Putin, you can be sure his successor in waiting is ready to assume the role of WEF puppet. If Putin hasn't already churned this borscht, he should be purging anyone who has ever uttered any word remotely kind about global management, including those pandemic Russian oligarchs profiting off COVID theatre. Better still, he should do us all a favour and send to those grimy globalist bathhouses of Geneva a nice plate of polonium cupcakes. One thing is certain, Russia will never be the same. Perhaps a move to Russia is in order. No CNN, BBC or any other CIA-controlled brain-destroying propaganda alphabet networks are allowed there anymore. No Western cancerous publications to lecture on how brave it is for a man with a penis to swim competitively in a woman's swimsuit, or how models with morbid obesity or obscure dermal maladies are beautiful. No courts to uphold the manipulated desires of teenagers toward life-destroying physiological alterations that will render them suicidal in 5 years, which have become in vogue. No drag queen story hours at children's libraries or lectures on race guilt or blood guilt privileges that need atoning. Putin is intent on purging Russia of all Western subversive malignancies, eager to take the people in a national DeLorean back to collective anchors of common culture and shared religious morality, where strength and unity can flourish again, assuming he can dodge all the Western NGO rats presently trying to topple his regime, or Western neoconservative South Carolina sissies calling for a bullet in his head, referring to Lindsey Graham, of course. Life in Russia may never be quite the same. The 30-year dalliance with fetishizing Western tangible brand goods, Western music and entertainment, a brief glitch in the Soviet matrix, is probably over. Once Ukraine is brought to heel, Putin will move quickly in his renationalization aims. But the cultural isolation means that things on that front are certainly back in the USSR. And perhaps, given Western civilization's move to adopt the more hideous elements of the Soviet era, it won't be such a bad thing. So, quite a tongue-in-cheek article, but really, hitting some good points in there. And there's a photo of Putin there smirking, so it's really quite an interesting scenario that's playing out here. And I always kind of say that don't take anything too seriously, and we have to laugh at the theatre of the absurd to a great degree. But as I said, my feeling is this is signalling, we're getting close to the end of this. I certainly hope we are, because the clowns that are supposedly in power at the moment are doing so much damage. But as we've said, it is waking people up in droves. So I'm going to move on to this declaration, which was put out by Archbishop Vigano, who was the former apostolic nuncio to the United States. And as I've said, he's sent various other letters and declarations to President Trump about the Great Reset plans. This was during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I'm just going to pick out some key points, because as I said, it's a 24-page long document, and I've printed it out and so I could pick out the key points I wanted to cover. So there'll be some paper rustling throughout this. A lot of the stuff that's in here I've already covered in previous shows, so I'm not going to repeat the things that I've already covered. I'm going to pick out some key points that basically add to the whole narrative about this. So it starts with the media narrative. If we look at what is happening in Ukraine, without being misled by the gross falsifications of the mainstream media, we realise that respect for each other's rights has been completely ignored. Indeed, we have the impression that the Biden administration, NATO, and the European Union deliberately want to maintain a situation of obvious imbalance, precisely to make impossible any attempt at a peaceful resolution of the Ukrainian crisis, provoking the Russian Federation to trigger a conflict. Herein lies the seriousness of the problem. This is the trap set for both Russia and Ukraine, using both of them to enable the globalist elite to carry out its criminal plan. Now, I just want to add a thought there. I don't believe Putin is falling for this. I think he's far too smart to let himself be trapped. I think he's going to be having the last laugh. It should not surprise us that pluralism and freedom of speech, so praised in countries that claim to be democratic, are daily disavowed by censorship and intolerance towards opinions not aligned with the official narrative. Manipulations of this kind have become the norm during the so-called pandemic, to the detriment of doctors, scientists, and dissenting journalists, who have been discredited and ostracized for the mere fact of daring to question the effectiveness of experimental serums. 2 years later, the truth about the adverse effects and the unfortunate management of the health emergency has proven them right, but the truth is stubbornly ignored because it does not correspond to what the system wanted and still wants today. If the world media have so far been able to lie shamelessly on a matter of strict scientific relevance, spreading lies and hiding reality, we should ask ourselves why in the present situation they should suddenly discover that intellectual honesty and respect for the code of ethics widely denied with COVID. Incidentally, if you want to read the whole of this, it was originally published by Gateway Pundit, but the actual document is all on Scribe, so you can find it on there. So moving on February 15, 2022, Russia delivered to the United States a draft of a treaty to end this situation and defend the Russian-speaking populations. Waste paper. This war began in 2014. And it was a war in the intentions of those who wanted to fight the Russian minority of Donbass. We will have a job and pensions and they will not. We will receive bonuses for having children, and they will not. Our children will have schools and kindergartens. Their children will stay in the basements. In this way, we will win this war, said President Petro Poroshenko in 2015. And by the way, there are links to various articles to back up what he's saying in this declaration. It will not escape notice that these measures are similar to the discrimination against the so-called unvaxxed who have been deprived of work, pay and education. 8 years of bombing in Donetsk and Lugansk with hundreds of thousands of victims, 150 dead children and very serious cases of torture, rape, kidnapping and discrimination. On February 18, 2022, the presidents of Donetsk and Lugansk, Denis Pushilin and Leonid Pasechnik, ordered the evacuation of the civilian population of their provinces into the Russian Federation due to the ongoing clashes between the Donbas People's Militia and the Ukrainian Armed Forces. On February 21st, the State Duma, lower house of the Russian Parliament, unanimously ratified the treaties of friendship, cooperation and mutual assistance introduced by President Putin with the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics. At the same time, the Russian president ordered the sending of troops from the Russian Federation to restore peace in the Donbass region. Here one may wonder why, in a situation of blatant violation of human rights by neo-Nazi military forces and paramilitary apparatuses, who fly flags bearing swastikas and display the effigy of Adolf Hitler against the Russian-speaking population of the independent republics, the international community feels obliged to consider the intervention of the Russian Federation worthy of condemnation and indeed to blame Putin for the violence. Where is the much vaunted right of the people to self-determination, which was held valid on August 24, 1991, for the proclamation of Ukraine's independence and recognised by the international community? And why are we scandalised today by a Russian intervention in Ukraine when NATO carried out the same sort of thing in Yugoslavia 1991, Kosovo 1999, Afghanistan 2001, Iraq 2003, and in Libya and Syria, 2011, without anyone raising any objections, not to mention that in the last 10 years, Israel has repeatedly hit military targets in Syria, Iran, and Lebanon to prevent the creation of a hostile armed front on its northern border, and yet no nation has proposed imposing sanctions on Tel Aviv. It is dismaying to see with what hypocrisy the European Union and the United States, Brussels and Washington, are giving their unconditional support to President Zelensky, whose government for 8 years now has continued to persecute Russian-speaking Ukrainians with impunity, for whom it is even forbidden to speak in their own language, in a nation that includes numerous ethnic groups, of which those who speak Russian represent 17.2%. And it is scandalous that they are silent about the use of civilians as human shields by the Ukrainian army, which places anti-aircraft positions inside population centres, hospitals, schools and kindergartens precisely so that their destruction can cause deaths among the population. The mainstream media is careful not to show images of Russian soldiers helping civilians reach safe positions or organising humanitarian corridors which Ukrainian militias fire upon, just as it is also silent about the settling of scores, massacres, violence and theft by fringes of the civilian population to whom Zelensky has given weapons. The videos that can be seen on the internet give an idea of the climate of civil war that has been artfully fueled by the Ukrainian government. To this, we may also add the convicts released to be drafted into the army and also the volunteers of the Foreign Legion, a mass of fanatics without rules and without training that will contribute to worsening the situation, making it unmanageable. President Volodymyr Oleksandrovich Zelensky, as has been pointed out by many parties, the candidacy and election of Ukrainian President Zelensky corresponds to that recent cliché inaugurated in recent years of a comic actor or entertainment personality being lent to politics. Do not believe that being without a suitable cursus honorum is an obstacle to the rising to the top of institutions. On the contrary, the more a person is apparently a stranger to the world of political parties, the more it is assumed that his success is determined by those who hold power. And just to let you know, I had to look that up. It's a Latin phrase, cursus honorum. It means a course of honours, which is in effect succession of offices of increasing importance. In other words, working up through the levels to that senior position. Zelensky's performances in drag are perfectly consistent with the LGBTQ ideology that is considered by its European sponsors as an indispensable requirement of the reform agenda that every country ought to embrace, along with gender equality, abortion, and the green economy. No wonder Zelensky, a member of the WEF, was able to benefit from the support of Schwab and his allies to come to power and ensure that the Great Reset would also be carried out in Ukraine. Further on, the current Ukrainian president promoted his election campaign with a commercial that was disturbing, to say the least, in which, holding two machine guns, he fired on members of parliament pointed out as corrupt or subservient to Russia. The fight against corruption, trumpeted by the Ukrainian president in the role of servant of the people, does not correspond, however, to the picture that emerges of him from the so-called Pandora Papers, in which $40 million appear to have been paid to him on the eve of the elections by the Jewish billionaire Kolomoisky through offshore accounts. In his homeland, many accuse him of having taken power away from the pro-Russian oligarchs, not to give it to the Ukrainian people, but rather to strengthen his own interest group and at the same time remove his political adversaries. And just as a reminder, we've heard of Kolomoisky, in the articles written by Patel Patriot on devolution and his links to Burisma and all sorts of money laundering schemes. So it's interesting to have the same name crop up again. Zelensky's relations with the IMF and the WEF. Shortly after Zelensky's election, the International Monetary Fund threatened not to grant Ukraine a $5 billion loan if he did not comply with their demands. During a telephone conversation with the CEO of the IMF, Kristalina Georgieva, the Ukrainian president was rebuked for replacing Yakov Smoly with a man he trusted, Kirilo Shevchenko, who was less inclined to comply with the diktats of the IMF. Anders Asland writes at Atlantic Council, the problems surrounding the Zelensky government are mounting alarmingly. First of all, since March 2020, the president has led a reversal not only of the reforms pursued under him, but also those initiated by his predecessor Petro Poroshenko. Second, his government has not presented plausible proposals to resolve IMF concerns about Ukraine's unfulfilled commitments. Third, the president appears to no longer have a ruling parliamentary majority, and he seems disinterested in forming a reformist majority. It is evident that the IMF's interventions are aimed at obtaining the Ukrainian government's commitment to align itself with the economic, fiscal and social policies dictated by the globalist agenda, beginning with the independence, in quotes, of the Central Bank of Ukraine from the government, a euphemism with which the IMF calls on the Kiev government to renounce legitimate control over its central bank, which is one of the ways in which national sovereignty is exercised, along with the issuance of money and the management of public debt. On the other hand, just 4 months earlier, Kristalina Georgieva had launched the Great Reset together with Klaus Schwab, Prince Charles, and UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. What had not been possible with previous governments was brought to completion under the presidency of Zelensky, who entered the good graces of the WEF along with the new governor of the BCU, Kirilo Shevchenko. Less than a year later, in order to prove his subjection, Shevchenko wrote an article for the WEF entitled "Central Banks Are the Key to Countries' Climate Goals and Ukraine is Showing the Way." Thus, the Agenda 2030 is implemented under blackmail. Neo-Nazi and extremist movements in Ukraine. A country that calls for humanitarian aid from the international community to defend its population from Russian aggression should, in the collective imagination, stand out for respect for democratic principles and for legislation that prohibits activities and the spread of propaganda by extreme ideologies. Neo-Nazi movements engaged in military and paramilitary actions operate freely in Ukraine, often with the official support of public institutions. It should be remembered that the government has given explicit support to these extremist organisations, both by sending the Presidential Guard to the funerals of their representatives, as well as by supporting the Azov Battalion, a paramilitary organisation that is officially part of the Ukrainian army under the new name of Azov Special Operations Regiment and organised into the National Guard. The Azov Regiment is financed by the Ukrainian Jewish oligarch Igor Kolomoisky. We've got his name cropping up again. The former governor of Dnepropetrovsk, who is also thought to be the financier of the nationalist militias of Pravol Sektor, which are considered responsible for the Odessa massacre. We're talking about the same Kolomoisky mentioned in the Pandora Papers as a sponsor of President Zelensky. The battalion has relations with several far-right organisations in Europe and the United States. In March 2015, Ukrainian Interior Minister Arsen Avakov announced that the Azov Battalion would be one of the first units to be trained by US Army troops as part of their Operation Fearless Guard training mission. US training was discontinued on June 12, 2015, when the US House of Representatives passed an amendment banning all aid, including weapons and training, to the battalion because of its neo-Nazi past. The amendment was then revoked under pressure from the CIA, and the soldiers of the Azov battalion were trained in the United States. We have been training these guys for 8 years now. They are really good fighters. That's where the agency's program could have a serious impact. In 2016, an OSCE report, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, found that the Azov battalion was responsible for the mass killing of prisoners, the concealment of corpses in mass graves, and the systematic use of physical and psychological torture techniques. Just a few days ago, the deputy commander of the battalion, Vadim Troyan, was appointed chief of police of the Oblast region by Interior Minister Arsen Avakov. These are the so-called heroes fighting together with the Ukrainian army against the Russian soldiers. The Ukrainian war in the plans of the New World Order. The censorship being imposed against Russian broadcasters is clearly aimed at preventing the official narrative from being disproven by the facts. But while the Western media shows images of the video game War Thunder, frames from the movie Star Wars, explosions in China, videos of military parades, footage from Afghanistan, the Rome Metro, or images of mobile crematoria by passing them off as real and recent scenes of war in Ukraine, reality is ignored because it has already been decided to provoke a conflict as a weapon of mass destruction that legitimizes new restrictions of freedoms in Western nations, according to the plans of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset and the United Nations Agenda 2030. It is evident that the Ukrainian people, beyond the issues that diplomacy can resolve, are victims of the same global coup d'etat being carried out by supranational powers that intend not peace between nations, but rather the establishment of the tyranny of the New World Order. Just a few days ago, Ukrainian parliamentarian Kira Rudik told Fox News while holding a Kalashnikov, "We know that we are not only fighting for Ukraine, but also for the New World Order." The human rights violations in Ukraine and the crimes of the neo-Nazi militias repeatedly denounced by Putin could not find a political solution because they were planned and fomented by the globalist elite with the collaboration of the European Union, NATO, and the American deep state, with an anti-Russian tone intended to make inevitable a war whose goal is to impose, primarily in Europe, the forced adoption of energy rationing, travel restrictions, the replacement of paper money with electronic money, and the adoption of digital ID. We are not talking about theoretical projects. These are decisions that are about to be taken concretely at the European level as well as in individual countries. Ukraine is the latest victim of accomplished executioners. The Russian-Ukrainian crisis did not suddenly erupt a month ago. It has been prepared and fomented for a long time, certainly beginning with the 2014 White Coup that was desired by the American deep state in an anti-Russian key. This is demonstrated, among other incontestable facts, by the training of the Azov battalion by the CIA to kill Russians, with the CIA forcing the revocation of the amendment banning aid to the battalion made by Congress in 2015. The interventions made by Joe and Hunter Biden have gone in the same direction. Thus, there is evidence of long-term premeditation consistent with NATO's relentless expansion towards the east. The color revolution of Euromaidan, as well as the establishment of a pro-NATO government composed of Homines Novi, trained by the World Economic Forum, and George Soros, I think that's new men, was intended to create the conditions for the subordination of Ukraine to the NATO bloc, removing it from the influence of the Russian Federation. To this end, the subversive action of the Hungarian philanthropists' NGOs, supported by media propaganda, has kept silent about the crimes of neo-Nazi paramilitary organisations financed by the same people who sponsor Zelensky. I think that's referring to George Soros, by the way. But if the brainwashing carried out by the mainstream media in Western nations has succeeded in conveying a completely distorted narrative of reality, the same cannot be said for Ukraine, where the population is well aware of the corruption of the political class in power, as well as of its remoteness from the real problems of the Ukrainian nation. We in the West believe that the oligarchs are only in Russia, while the reality is that they are present above all throughout the entire galaxy of nations that formerly composed the Soviet Union, where they can accumulate wealth and power simply by placing themselves at the disposition of foreign philanthropists and multinational corporations. It matters little if their offshore accounts are the primary cause of the poverty of the citizens of these nations, the backwardness of the healthcare system, the excessive power of the bureaucracy, the almost total absence of public services, foreign control of strategic companies, and the progressive loss of sovereignty and national identity. The important thing is to make money and be immortalized, along with political personalities, bankers, arms dealers, and those who starve the people. The Ukrainian people, regardless of what ethnic group they may belong to, are merely the latest unwitting hostages of the supranational totalitarian regime that brought the national economics of the entire world to their knees through the COVID deception. After publicly theorizing about the need to decimate the world population and transform the survivors into chronically ill patients who have irreparably compromised their immune systems, the Ukrainian people should think hard about calling upon the intervention of NATO or the EU, provided that it is really the Ukrainian people who do it, and not rather their corrupt rulers aided by racist mercenaries and neo-Nazi groups in the pay of hierarchs. Because while they are promised freedom from the invader, with whom they share the common religious and cultural heritage of having once been part of Great Russia, in reality what is cynically being prepared is their definitive cancellation, their enslavement to the Great Reset that foresees everything except the protection of their identity, their sovereignty and their borders. Let the Ukrainian people look at what has happened to the nations of the European Union. The mirage of prosperity and security is demolished by the contemplation of the rubble left by the euro and the lobbies of Brussels. Nations invaded by illegal immigrants who feed crime and prostitution, destroyed in their social fabric by politically correct ideologies, knowingly brought to bankruptcy by reckless economic and fiscal policies, led towards poverty by the cancellation of labour and social security protections, deprived of a future by the destruction of the family and the moral and intellectual corruption of the new generations. If there is a positive aspect that each of us can recognise in this crisis, it is that it has revealed the horror of the globalist tyranny, its ruthless cynicism, its capacity to destroy and annihilate everything it touches. It is not the Ukrainians who ought to enter the European Union or NATO. It is rather the other nations who ought to finally be jolted by pride and courage to leave them, shaking off this detestable yoke and rediscovering their own independence, sovereignty, identity and faith. Their own souls. To be clear, the New World Order is not an inescapable destiny, and it can be subverted and denounced if only the peoples of the world realize that they have been deceived and swindled by an oligarchy of clearly identifiable criminals who one day will have to answer for those sanctions and those blocks of funds that today they apply with impunity to anyone who does not bend the knee before them. The United States of America and the European nations should not marginalize Russia, but rather form an alliance with her, not only for the restoration of trade for the prosperity of all, but in view of the reconstruction of a Christian civilization, which alone can save the world from the globalist techno-health transhuman monster. So those are the main points I wanted to cover from that long declaration. Also, just say, and this was included in a James Gilliland, a SETI newsletter, Edgar Cayce said Russia would be the cradle of Christianity, which will come to pass. And I've seen other prophecies that Russia would be the ones to liberate us. So, you know, that's another reason why I'm so convinced that Putin is really doing this on behalf of all of us who don't want to be part of Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 and Klaus Schwab's Great Reset. So let's just pray for a favourable outcome quickly for the whole planet, because we are getting tired of this. So that's all I have time for this week, or for this Wednesday. I hope you'll join me for my Saturday show. And thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I will be back, as I say, on Saturday. Thank you to Nancy for producing. Stay well, be safe, and bye for now.
You have been listening to Cosmic Creating with Jan Shaw, updating current reality, a production of CosmicReality.com.